I was just thinking about 5 minutes ago about the system and how, unfortunately, it's gone full circle again. Because back in the 80s and 90s, and even before that too, there were lots and lots of radio stations across America, especially. The world could tune into them because many of them were shortwave, and you could pick them up across the whole planet. And because there was so much competition, then they had so many different types of shows on, but lots of them would go into the system. And it got really good in its output, basically, of clarity, as it focused in on the organizations that were all connected, organizations that run us all, organizations that people have pretty well forgotten about, even though they're still running us. And I did a lot of shows too in the 90s about what's happening and how we're controlled and how we're programmed and how we're given topics to think about because your masters want you to think about them because they're getting you ready for something that's coming down a pike and they want to make sure that you'll vote or at least go along with what they want you to do. We're constantly managed this way, and it's done in a way that has to be not so overt generally, except through taxes. They'll add extra taxes. Now we have carbon taxes in Canada, things like that. But the world would tune in to these shows from America because they didn't get that in their own countries, and it was a breath of fresh air. And you did have wonderful eccentric people who had their own special area of investigation, and they were almost like, well, they were fanatical about their particular area of investigation, and they delved into it meticulously. It obsessed their lives, basically. And because of that, they had tremendous information to give you and share it with the people. Because we're living, as I say, in such a system that doesn't make any sense at all. Even though you can come out in a system like today, with the same system running us more overtly than ever before, folk are right back to square one. They still think it's all real. They do. Back in the 90s, I came out with a lot of the stuff that had been put out by people long before me and who were dead, a lot of them, and a lot of my own observations as well about this system. And I thought about it, as I say, a few minutes ago. I was thinking about it, and I thought, well, how would you put it across? Well, years ago, they had awfully good movies for children, a long time ago, and a lot of them had come out initially in novels and so on, and put into movies. And The Adventures of Sinbad was an awfully good collection, and the paternity movies of Sinbad, and everybody identified with this character. All the children did, because it was real imagination with flying carpets and genies and bottles and things like that. Things that children would love to have, that ability there for power. Wow, I could fly in on a carpet and it wouldn't cost me anything. And if you got dirty, it wouldn't take you to the cleaners. But we thought of all these things, and Sinbad, again, would occasionally meet these genies that came out of bottles or lamps, and you just had to rub the lamp. And every child knows how many times you had to rub it. I mean, it was vital, or else terrible things could happen. But the genies were huge, huge creatures that came out of these things. And they were loud, and they had very cunning faces. And you just didn't trust them. And the whole idea of the genie was to have to go through a formula of giving you three wishes. And the genie would try and trick you with the type of wish that you wish for. So you'd end up with a kind of dud wish, in a sense, because you didn't word it properly. Words were awfully, awfully important. So if you'd seen these things a few times, every child knew, hey, when he says, I'll give you three wishes, he didn't put a time limit on thinking about it. So you go and buy an ice cream or something, come back and think about what you want to ask that thing on the screen, and you worded it awfully carefully with all kinds of guarantees and things. You get exactly what you wanted. But children could immediately see this genie. It was, you couldn't trust him at all. He wasn't somebody who would be your pal. Do you realize how we lose this ability to discern things so quickly? It's drummed out of you at school. And then we're given a lot of nonsense for history. We're given a lot of nonsense too about the systems in which we live, the countries as well, the histories of the countries. And every country has citizens that will be patriotic to it. It doesn't matter where it is or what kind of system it is. Because It's a primal thing. You belong to this area. It's your area. Your ancestors lived there. And you have a tie to it in your natural culture and the natural language you all shared and things like that. All what they call a nation. And how it's been used and abused down through centuries and centuries. And the ordinary folk really, they do all their fighting for it, for themselves off to wars. And they suffer, try to keep it together when they're highly taxed to pay for all the wars, even afterwards for the rest of their lives. And yet in the countries in which they live, there's always this minority class. And of course the communists and Marxists call them the capitalist class. But they don't like to point out who exactly they are, this capitalist class, because they don't. It's strange that in Britain, for instance, you had a middle class, but it wasn't a huge middle class either. And after Britain gave up its so-called empire, the managerial class, a middle class type, diminished very quickly back down to almost a working class state, because even the ones who'd been abroad and came back to Britain, they were working as a middle class, governing other countries, you know, or the lesser governors, as you can call them. But there were ones too who really ended up being just low middle class in Britain. In Britain, it was easier to tell who was middle class, as opposed to the US, where a lot of even blue collar workers, actual workmen, would classify themselves as middle class because they had good incomes. In Britain, if you're working class, you generally just were at the very bottom. And that was the system before World War II and after World War II for a long time. And so there's much, much more to a class system than folk think. But the ones at the very, very, very top, generally who are intermarried, if you go down their heritage, so you'll find they're intermarried, the top 2,000 families, so in the state of Britain or London. And sometime or another in the last 200 years, somebody's been married to all the rest of them. That's the way it works. You forget, through the magic of neuroscience, psychology, and behaviorism, and the marketing companies that study you intensely with all the different surveys that's done constantly for psychology and so on, we're right back to square one again, where we can't tell what's what. We have more stuff about royalty and made-up dramas, literally made by soap opera writers, to try and humanize people that you'll never meet, never have met. And to make an idea being, oh, if Meghan has a tiff with so-and-so, they won't, it's to make you think they're just like you, they're all human, living in Coronation Street, you know, next door to each other, along streets and stuff. It's to humanize them. It's all fiction. It's all fiction for all of them, actually. And unfortunately, that same system that now is attached to royal stories every day in different papers, handouts, is used across the world for all of us. We're right back to square one again, where all the things that were taught in the 90s, and I came out and I said, for goodness sake, you've got to get beyond politics here. Politics is a Punch and Judy show. It's a show for the public to make you believe that it's all real. It's a puppet show. And whoever gets elected is allowed to get all the applause, etc., for the term they're in. They'll be awfully rich by the time they come out. You all know that. And you're given even better jobs, you might say. Like Tony Blair was given when he left. That's how he can afford all these multi-million-dollar homes and so on, by JP Morgan, etc. Yeah, so if you do what you're put in to do by the folk who own everything, yeah, you're well rewarded. And all the parties are the same. All the parties are the same. It's a show for the public, because the public are always... It isn't just an economic thing. I've mentioned this before. There's a stagnancy in society. The younger folk were the first to notice it in the UK. The UK was devastated after World War II, remember? It really was devastated after World War I. And they managed to get through a Great Depression right into World War II. And so it was pretty well misery for most folk from World War I right through until the 1950s, 60s. It really was. And that's why they came out with the new swinging 60s and the British invasion and all. It was a massive onslaught worked out by huge think tanks to try and stir something for the positive change, which would be directed by those who already owned everything and owned the world. And And that's what came out. That's why the big groups were... Do you realize how much money it takes to blast a group like the Beatles from nowhere into across the world, world fame? That's millions of pounds at that time. That's what it cost. Millions. Publicity. Massive publicity. Like the creation of a product, you see. And getting other newspapers across the world on board with it, that costs money. They don't do it for nothing. They're paid huge bucks to do it. Because show business is a business. But again, it was to strike at the youth and use the youth to bring in or think they were bringing in something better than they already had. And what it was, as we all know, I hope, if folk remember, it was a system, it was a blend of Marxism and socialism, communism, and capitalism. That was the whole blend. The elite, as I said, always wanted a dictatorial form of government, if they could manage it and keep it and hold it, you see. It was the fastest way to get things done. And all through the time up till Margaret Thatcher, they had used ex-prime premiers and ex-top bureaucrats from departments of government to mix with their cohorts across the world, their counterparts across the world, and work in societies and groups together to bring on, to get things done and not be responsible to the public. They do it quietly. That's really how things were always run beforehand. And Maggie Thatcher admitted that. She'd now joined a group. And it was the Royal Institute for International Affairs. She met all the other ex-prime ministers and presidents going back for years. And they could get things done quietly. And the UN would often take credit for things. But the UN is also a front for this kind of Marxist system. It's a Marxist system that does not rule out that there should be multi-billionaire leaders, remember. And such things as equality of wages and so on. Marxism is centralized government. That means world government too. That was always a goal. But it also means that science, replaced the old priesthoods. The scientists replaced them. So they're white-coated priesthoods. Some don't wear the white coats, as you know, but the fact is that's what you're trained to believe and listen to and follow. They would with the using, often, not always, but often the verbiage of the claimer, the latest scientific results on things, they would guide the world into a uniform direction. And that's what you're seeing today. It's so sad. Is to get you used to the fact that politics is a comedy. That's no accident what's happening with Trump, and I don't care who you vote for, who you believe in. It's no accident that now you're seeing this incredible charade of another soap opera with Trump, and the other side doing the standard underground, you know, weather underground techniques of just accusing him of all kinds of things. It's like saying, you've got four legs, and if you fall into the trap of saying, well, no, I don't, it's only when I stand in a certain direction, it looks that way. If you fall into that trap, you see, you're beaten. And even if when you try to answer it, you're wasting energy, and your mind is off kilter, basically, of where it should be, and then they hit you another one. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's aiming really at keeping someone to fend off the bricks that are getting thrown at them. You know, that's what it really is. And if you keep them deluged with that, the idea is you hope to break them down or even give them a nervous breakdown. But you'll get nothing else done, you see. But it's the main purpose of this at the moment is to acclimatize the people to a new system of government being necessary. That's what it is. That's really what it is. And it's giving the impression that the government is basically powerless. And that's a joke, isn't it? I mean, if government sets its sights on little old you, you'll be picked up tomorrow if they want it. One of their agencies will do it. But when you're watching a system where it would appear to be, for most folk, appear to be, in appearances, that outright radical communism is trying to overthrow the government would have the duty to arrest them for treason, wouldn't they? That is a law. And it's not happening either. So obviously you're watching some kind of charade on the go. Now there will be definitely, by whatever reason, they'll be used for a real show of force in the countries. We've been waiting for this for years in all the countries. As they crash the economy the next time, and bring you into the next system of rationing, That's what the whole green movement's about. It's nothing to do with what they tell you, or climate change. It's to bring you into this new socialistic, apparently socialistically run system, where you'll have experts and commissars, you know, communities right up to the top, running your lives from birth to death. That's always been the goal here. And at the moment, it's the climate that they're using as a big driving force to make it happen, Agenda 21 and all the rest of it, and 2030, etc. So, and it was, at that time, it was called the Millennium Project for Maurice Strong and the rest of them. But now it's just Agenda 21 for 21st century, with sections off 2015, 2030, and so on. And that's it. And how you must be trained to live. Well, how do you get them from where you are now, which is almost destitute for some of us, to where it's to be completely destitute down the road? But you'll all be equal. So that's it. That's beautiful communism. And that's what those who rule the world want, because it won't affect them. They want a manageable world, a depopulation agenda with no breeding for all the unworthy types. And it's coming down the pike so fast. It's to me, it's a comedy to watch it. And it's almost like how they try to present things in a slick way, but it's so grossly incompetent in how they do it. And I wonder how many folk are swallowing it. I know I don't watch TV, so I'm not given the brainwashing daily on any topic that they want through you to your brain. But I do wonder how many folk are swallowing all this stuff by watching scary pictures from goodness knows when and what part of the world on a whirlwind or whatever it happens to be. It's easy to get things across through scary scenarios, you know, and repetition. But the whole idea with socialism was to run the world in an organized, scientific fashion by experts, and which means you can't live like you've been living, the way you have been, and you can't be allowed to make your own decisions, because it'll harm the environment, it'll harm everything, harm. You say, you're bad, it's your fault. So pay for it. I've been saying this for years and years and years, and it's comical to see some people, even in Canada, come out and say the same thing, who worked on these projects, and have come out and admitted it now. It doesn't change it, of course, because it's written in stone, and this is a big agenda. I've given so many talks from Prince Philip, for instance, who was the head of all these different wildlife organizations for years. But when you get into the nitty-gritty of it, it was setting up reserves across the planet on the best agricultural land, even across Africa, national parks. He was the head. They don't want people farming there. They don't want them being prosperous or healthy, for that matter. We really go into it. There's always another reason behind the genie with the smile that came out of the lamp. It's like the tactics the communists used across the world during and before and in after the Bolshevik Revolution, which was to demand in the West that they would attack people giving out food or clothing to the poor and the countries of Europe. The idea being that you couldn't get the critical number of people necessary to get revolution started if you were feeding them and clothing them. And you see, that's where they attacked as well, the churches, and the Catholic Church especially at that time. They looked physical raids on the churches to try to stop them helping the poor. Because helping the poor attracted the numbers power for the great revolution that was to come. You always remember, and with this tactic, and it doesn't matter what system you want to call it, fascist, communist, they're all the same, you know. And anything that works, especially in a totalitarian system, is always the same anyway. Socialist, fascist, whatever you want to call it. Because it has to be. It's a system to get things done according to a group, generally a group at the top, who've got an idea there, that they don't even know what the system should be and how things should be. They're control freaks, you see. So we watch the communist techniques of the past, and then you're watching it happening across the West today, because the idea is you must make things so bad that the folk will demand the very thing that you want to give them. That's how it all works. You'll demand it, and they'll say, "Oh, okay then." And here's a new type of system for you. See what you think of this, and that's how it always is. It really is. That's how it always is. And you can get disparaging thoughts eventually about society as a whole, or humanity as a whole. Because honestly, the history is all about the Machiavellian types that advise kings and queens and governments, and now they've got whole boards and panels and think tanks to do it with fancy names. It sounds very legitimate, of course, but it's the same thing. How we deceive the public to do something to the public or to get them to go along with something. That's how things really are done. Sad, isn't it? It's sad. But the power, it coalesces into groupthink, from one person to groupthink. They get more done, and then they have organized power. And the whole future, what they saw long ago was, yeah, totalitarian regimes get things done much quicker and faster. But of course, the people are generally are pretty miserable because they're getting taxed in the ground. They're told what to do, can't do. They're licensed for everything that they do, even opening their mouths, what you can, can't say, and all the rest of it. Much like today, it's rather miserable, unless you want to end up in a system like East Germany at one time, under the Stasi, the communist Stasi. I've mentioned before so many times the lives of others. It's really worth watching because it shows you how bad it was then, without the computer studying all of you from your home every day and your cell phones. They had so many spies from the public, blackmailed any spy and everybody else through threats and so on, that almost half the public were Stasi spies at one time or another on other people, threatened by some force or whatever. But you see how it worked. That's your totalitarian regime. And many people in the West admired that. The things we could get done if we just told the public what to do and they'd have to obey. It says freedom of ideas is an awful nuisance to people. It really is, isn't it? You can't do that, you say. And they'll say, oh no. I can remember Pierre Trudeau, that's just in study. Pierre Trudeau himself was a member of, he was a leader for Comintern, the Young Communist League for Canada, before World War II. And he led delegation eventually to Moscow. It was well understood at the time, it was in the newspapers of that period, that he was that a member of this, and he led the delegation. It was 1952, after World War II, he led it to Moscow. And then eventually they made him prime minister under the term liberal. And it always stuck in my mind that of Khrushchev, of the Soviet system. And Khrushchev, he was a president or prime minister. They've got a president and a prime minister, as you know, in the Soviet system. But he was sent over to the US and to meet the delegations there and counterparts, so a PR exercise. But he was in agreement, remember, with the United Nations and the pacts. Since through the United Nations, you make these pacts and these deals, even with the IPCC, the idea for climate, which is the big driving force to bring in the communist system under a different guise. A crisis guy. You have a crisis, you say. If it's not there, you create it. I mean, that's the same thing that the Hearst, you know, Hearst said to his reporters at one time, get a war started, you know, print about the war in Spain or somewhere it was, or Cuba, or but there is no war going on here. He said, well, write about it as though it was. So it was in the paper, it must be true. Same kind of thing. But they sent Khrushchev over, and he met, I think it was with Nixon at the time, and they're quipping back and forth, and I think Nixon says something about communists. He says, oh, he says, communist, meaning Canada, and talking about Canada and the US. He says, oh, he says, over here, he says, we don't call them communists, we call them liberals, he said. And that stuck to the day, because Pierre Trudeau ran under the liberal ticket, and eventually he and René Lévesque, one of his stalwart supporters, really. I had a little interview off the cuff back in the, I think it was the 80s, late 80s, and you'd see Pierre Trudeau's shock in his face as René Lévesque was talking rather candidly, and he says, yeah, well, back in those days we were communists and Marxists, he says, and you could see Trudeau immediately freezing almost in anxiety, because Trudeau had gone through a great show in Canada of stopping what was supposedly a communist takeover, a coup, an attempted coup, and kidnappings as well in Montreal around that same period, or just before that happened, that interview. So he became the strong man for Canada to allay the fears of everybody thinking, remembering he was a communist in reality, you see. And here's René Lévesque kind of reminding them again that he was a communist. It was quite good. But anyway, we're run by people who who know how it should be. But remember, I mean, that from their point of view and total control, we tell you and you do and you obey. And science is a new god, religion and superstitions out the window. So you'll obey our findings and science, like this phony climate change, you know, too. I mean, that can get you done today, attacks on people who come out and see it, because they've radicalized the youth, you see, intentionally, just like the Young Communist League. They radicalized them. They used them for the Cultural Revolution in China. And they just sat loose on their parents and their teachers, and they were killing them. Easy to radicalize children. Easy, and youngsters. Very easy. The Hitler Youth knew how to do it. They got it from the Young Communist League, because they studied them too. They existed before the Nazi Party came along. So it's always the same techniques that are used, of course, in radicalization. And they will turn their parents in, and they will actually destroy them physically. You'll see the hatred and anger that's building up, and they're being trained to hate through their schooling and all this stuff that's been indoctrinated into them. And they will go nuts when the time is right. It's an army, naturally. And to me, watching all this happening, it's like repetition from previous eras and different excuses using the same techniques, you see. And it's been allowed to happen. That's a key there. It's been allowed to happen. I mentioned before about Leni Riefenstahl, how she talked about, she was asked in an interview, one of the few interviews she ever gave, but she was asked, how did it happen with the middle classes in Germany when Adolf Hitler came in? In other words, they heard what, or got at least ideas or whiffs of what he was planning and so on. But they also knew, obviously, their system was in chaos since World War I, with massive reparations to every other country, because they were given the blame for the war. Even though it wasn't just their fault, all the top nations, I mean, even France, remember, had an empire by then. Britain had an empire. And they really didn't want Germany getting a foot in the door either. Because the elite of every country own the countries, they own what is the nation, and the public are just there to as the tools to produce and to create the army and to staff the army for them. But Riefenstahl said it was, and I know what she means. It's you float through something like a kind of dream, especially when you feel detached from politics. And she was pretty well apolitical. They tried to get her on a hold, but she was apolitical. She wasn't interested in politics. And people who are not interested in politics can certainly be used by politicians and leaders. They'll always grab any celebrities or anybody who's got any name for anything in showbiz or whatever, or movies, and use them, or try and use them. Look at the photographs that PR shots you see every day with politicians, with so-called celebrities, people who are just actors and so on. But she said that the middle classes didn't stop it because they floated into it. We get so used to be managed, you see, by this group at the top, and we don't have much trust in them or faith in them, and we let them play their little games, but eventually they play the game where you will keep ignoring them, as you always do. And it's not your fault either, because they're psychopathic, basically, politicians, and I don't care what party it is, or even if it's local up to the top. They have that psychopathic trait for sure. And so we don't take much notice, but you can sleepwalk and float right into it until you're in a totalitarian regime. You see, that was always the idea of the Fabian Society. There was a left, they ran the left-wing group on behalf of the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which ran the right-wing groups and everything else, you see. That's how it's run. And it's quite amazing to me to see it all happening over and over and again, the same techniques being used over, and people just drift into it. As they're given, basically, soap operas, and I mean manufactured soap operas, with accusations against, and it doesn't matter if you like the guy or not, or Trump, to me, they're front people. If you didn't vote, you'd have revolutions every so often. And voting was created to stall revolutions from happening. True revolutions, you see. And so you always say, oh, well, you know, you can always vote them out and get somebody in the next thing. That's your idea. So it puts you off every 5 years or so, 4 or 5 years, till the next vote. And so you stall and stall and stall, and things don't get any better at all. That's how it works. And the real governing of the country is not done by the politician. It's done by way behind the scenes by the specialized branches. And now they've outsourced so many things, all governments, That's exactly what the elite wanted a long time ago. It's right back to where to private groups and think tanks running all the major things, including policies on everything, including warfare, including sustainability practices, including hygiene for children, and including mental hygiene. We've heard all this stuff before, a long time ago. Do you remember where that was? And as I mentioned, all these things, on hygiene things, what are they doing to your children now? So you're floating right through it, just like people did in Germany, just like the middle classes allowed, basically, that happened in Russia too, where millions were slaughtered. There's always a massive slaughter when the push goes on, you know? And you can smell it coming with what you're witnessing, with the boasting from the United Nations about the support now it's got for the climate change policy, which is total management. And I mean what you can eat and what you can't eat. And the meat is going to be pretty well a scarcity for you lot, not for the ones at the top. And you put on a diet, it's not going to be healthy at all. Then as they cut back all your energy, etc., especially in the colder climates, you're going to die a lot sooner, folks. Because they plan to keep increasing the cost of whatever fuels you in the winter time and for the rest of the year. Absolutely. This is depopulation time, and they've made it rather rampantly clear that sustainability is really a method or an excuse in order to tackle what Prince Philip talked about, overpopulation. It always has been. And he was rather blatant about it in many of his speeches. And many others have been as well. But that's the whole point. That's the purpose of this thing of sustainability. And the hit on climate change would be the excuse they'd all to make a pact. They could never go back on it once they started rolling. That's how they do things. You'd never go back on it. And no matter how absurd it will seem, they'll stick to it. Even if you're up to your eyeballs in ice, they'll still say it's global warming. Or then they'll go back to, oh, it's climate change. That vague, undefined thing, climate change, you see. But you can't go on living like that. And I've got articles out now saying you can't go on living like this. And I've taught you, the governments are pretty well used. Look, you're looking at it. What's happened in the Western world in the last few years? Massive migration from the wars has been caused that they shouldn't have been there in the first place, those wars. And that was using the excuse to flood in, to break the populations up of Europe. It's been publicly admitted by a lot of the conspirators, you might say, who have been active in helping it all happen. But apart from that, the stagnation of this economy of jobs, because we don't manufacture, and we go through a pretense farce of accusing China of having all the things their way. Well, that was all said by a few of us at the time when they were signing the darn agreements with China and giving them all the manufacturing, and we paid to have it shipped over to them. The factories and the companies that put their names up in China, we paid for them to go over, and we kept paying for any losses they claimed to incur setting up over there until they were free again. This was all part of this deal. And we sat, again, we floated through that silently. Can't believe it's happening, eh? Most of them didn't even notice, you know. Except the ones who were laid off from, as their factories went under one by one by one. In Ontario, I saw them. It's happening all the time. And there was folk I knew who were desperate, as they were losing their jobs, desperate to try and get a pension or early pension before they lost it all. And they jumped from one factory to the next as they went under. Like, it's the top of dominoes before each one falls. Boom, 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 boom. Literally, I saw that happening. And it was all done by politicians who claim now, oh, we didn't realise. We didn't realise that all you could do after that was sell stuff from China. You wouldn't make it from raw materials up to finished products on anything, you'll just import them. Well, I wouldn't even go into that argument because that's such a mute point. There is no point. The fact is, the service companies were dispelled back in the 1970s in Britain when you talked about what they would have as a service economy with the EU. And the top economists back then at least could mention that you would be like a dog jumping into a swimming pool and paddling until it drowned because it couldn't get out and it couldn't stay afloat any longer. That's exactly. And now we're at the end of it. We're drowning, you see. At the same time, they show you that politics is a joke. They go overboard in showing you that politics is just a comedy so that you'll demand the system once they give you hints of what they want to bring in. That's how it's done, folks. That's how it's done. Anyway, a few articles here just to back up what I'm talking about, perhaps. I don't even like talking about politics. It's always been a joke to me, anyway. Another thing, too, is the massive drug industry we have, illegal, and all the other in-betweens, the dark areas of it all. Because we're in an age where they're taking us all down, obviously, because we are dispirited. There's nothing coming next that we look forward to anymore. We don't even have a fake British invasion thing of music. That was truly fake with the masses, millions. It was like half the economy went to pay for all, to make a form of optimism out of nothing, really. You know, and it changed the youth culture into promiscuity, unfortunately. That's what happened in the marriage part, the planks of Communist Manifesto, eh? And socialism, very successful. So that, again, sustainability is winning and people don't have children. And then they slap the people in the face. They say, there's not enough of you. They're breeding, so we'll bring in migrants from outside. See, you can't win. And as they go under, too, because they will go under eventually, as they get steeped in a very toxic culture industry, and it'll affect them, too, the same. It already is, with children turning to drugs as well and things like that. And that's what happens. Anyway, here they're blaming America. At the moment, it's astonishing, too, in this one here, is about poor Guatemalan farmers. They turned to heroin poppies. And when the military destroyed their crops, many had only one choice, flee to the US. It's meant to be you feel sorry for all. Do you realize you can't feel sorry enough for your own countries? But this is astonishing that mainstream newspapers, well, you still use the same tactics to make you feel... You feel guilty that you, when you're broke as it is, and you're personally broke, and everybody's got problems, and all the areas that go along with it, as I say, in a destroyed culture and destroyed industries and all the rest of it, you're supposed to feel bad about other countries because the military is destroying their poppy crops, so they can't sell you all the heroin. You understand how bizarre and ridiculous this is? Anyway. They're blaming the U.S. for cutting back on their funding as well to Latin American countries. And the amount, the breakdowns and amounts per year, for instance, to each country, to try to give them some kind of economy. That's how we're fed the information, to give some kind of economy. But they're so corrupt, it ends up basically in the drug industry, because that's where the money is, the big money is. But here you're bribing countries to try and make them keep people in their own countries. Well, you don't have enough work in your own country to support yourselves. And your shops are all closing down. And eventually they've told you from the next part of the sustainability, you're not going to be able to afford anything to keep buying things from China. I hope you understand this, folks, how it works and how you've all been conned and fed a paper trail. Is it a paper trail? You run and you find the paper and you pick them up and you save them and you stick them in a bag and you keep running in the race. And at the end of it, you would have all different bits of paper to follow the trail, the route that was laid out for you. Well, that's exactly what's happening to you all now. You've been fed the different bits of paper and you're running along a road that you didn't choose yourself, and you're being led up the garden path towards the end of all. So it's your fault, you see, that poor Guatemalan farmers turned to heroin poppies. And it says, for years, the Mexican drug cartels persuaded poor indigenous farmers in the western highlands of Guatemala to replace their crops with poppies, just like they did in Afghanistan and so on. But it's in Latin America too. So it's not good enough just to have the coca for the cocaine. Now they're bringing it closer to America, a big market, so you get them to make it in Guatemala. And it says, so they used it to make heroin, although farmers were often told the plant was used to produce medicine. You understand how many, they've all had their computers everywhere on the planet and their cell phones for years and years. No one is falling for that. They didn't know. They were often told the plant was just to produce medicine. Anyway, the government, under pressure from the United States, then they came in to eradicate the poppy fields with no other high-value crops to replace the poppies and no program available to help replace farmers' income. The crackdown shoved indigenous farmers such as Lopez and his family into poverty, it says. So loss of poppy revenue is just one of many reasons Guatemalans have poured across the borders by the thousands into the US. And it goes. So you're supposed to feel really bad. You're simply outlawing and stopping them growing drugs to hook your own children on and your relatives, or maybe even yourself. And feel sorry for the poor souls, you see. You understand that I've never seen such rubbish, guff, dumped on the people of the US and elsewhere in such incredible vast quantities as we're getting today. But again, that'll all come out into, well, we're all part of the Americas now in the North American Free Trade Negotiation Pact, etc. It's now morphed into another name, but it's the same deal. And we've all got to be one continent eventually, you know. So their problems are your problems, and so on. But anyway, crime there, and corruption is so terrible that they just have to migrate out of them. Actually, there's a bit in the article where they're talking to, I think it was a police chief or something, one of the areas there, talking about it was so quiet now and peaceful. He was happy for it because the people had all migrated up to America. And so he didn't have all the crime. People could breathe and relax. But anyway, this is what you're getting now. You're getting incredible nonsense for news, as you know. And again, here you have this one too. Getting back to what I started off with here, about how they admire totalitarianism. Remember the CFR, and Royal Institute for International Affairs, same group that run the world, same as the Pacific Rim Coalition as well. It's the same group, all one group, who helped plan all of this for the world government system, who gave you the United Nations and all the rest of it. They admired totalitarian regimes. They admired the Soviet system to get things done. They studied and admired Nazism to get things done. And initially, too, they're all for that, too. And again, you know, people like Julian Huxley, who really admired this socialist dictatorship system, because he wanted to get on with the whole agenda of depopulation and only breed the better types, meaning his own class and scientific groups and so on, for this new scientific utopia they're going to create for themselves. But they'll never change, you see. So at a Toronto fundraiser, Justin Trudeau, the son of Pierre Trudeau, right? Pierre Trudeau, who was the best pals with Castro. Castro came over all the time in his uniform, I assume, and vice versa. It says, but Justin Trudeau seemingly admires China's basic dictatorship. No kidding, I'm really surprised. So it's a level of admiration I actually have for China, because their basic dictatorship is allowing them to actually turn their economy around on a dime. Well, no wonder, because you see, they make everything for the planet now. And they do have a mono government, one party system, that tells you obey or that's it, you see. The only problem in Canada is we don't have a complete Chinese population who'll obey. And we're collectivist society. That's his problem too. So they ought to have think tanks working on all different groups of people in Canada and the US and elsewhere, you see. That's a nuisance set. It really is, isn't it? But yeah, he admires it. And he can turn it around on a dime. So during the event, which itself was widely criticized for sexist and patronizing undertones, no kidding you, an audience member asked Mr. Trudeau which nation's administration he most admired, and as we came back with, a level of admiration I actually have for China. Because he said the basic dictatorship is allowing them to actually turn their economy around on a dime. And say we need to go green. See, there you go, they mean sustainability. We need to start, you know, investing in solar. Really, that's all sort of wash. There is a flexibility that I know Stephen Harper must dream about, having a dictatorship where you can do whatever you want, that I find quite interesting. And noting he was in camera, he then said, but Sun News, the Sun newspaper, can now report that I prefer China. And of course it did. It gets me too. It says the National Democratic Party equated the off-the-cuff remarks to gaffes made by one-time US vice president candidate and hockey mom Sarah Palin. Now the NDP, National Democratic Party, is a few degrees left of Karl Marx. Really? So they really complain about Justin's fawning over China. When Justin Trudeau does his best to let out his inner Sarah Palin and shows Canadians not to trust instincts, Canadians know they can trust Tom Mulcair to hold conservatives to account for the scandals and mismanagement, says a news release. And it wasn't his first expression of admiration for the quasi-communist rising global superpower. Because Mr. Trudeau has also noted that the concerns before in a previous one talk swirling around and takeover of natural resources by a Chinese state-owned entity. He said it would be similar to those of a takeover by a Scandinavian state-owned entity. So, in other words, you get so ticked off about the laws and regulations you have to go through when folk own, when it's privately owned land or whatever, or resources, and the government wants to take it over. But China doesn't have that problem, you see. So that's one article there. And then you have this one too. Canada's Liberal Party committed to net zero carbon emissions by 2050 if re-elected in next month's federal election. And will beat the current 2030 emissions goal with its plan, it says. So Justin Trudeau's party will help workers prepare for a clean energy transition. It means no energy at all, folks, is what it ends up being, because it's not going to be enough, as we all know. Anyway, the net zero announcement means that some sectors could still pollute, but their carbon would be offset by other measures, meaning you've got to pay for it, and pay for it, and pay for it. Remember, too, I keep telling you about austerity measures. I gave talks about that a few years ago, that they were talking about the United Nations bringing in for sustainability. Well, this is it. How do you get to austerity? Well, they up the prices of everything. They tax you for everything you need that's essential. High taxes, increasing, and the standard the Marxist formula. Ever-increasing taxes, and instead increasing income tax, as well as other taxes. There you go, you're into austerity. And then the meat will be out of sight, so you can't afford it. It already is pretty well in Canada, as good stuff is anyway. And they've said that they want you to stop eating meat. Eventually, you'll be forced to stop eating meat, for your particular class, you see. That reminds me of Orwell's 1984, when Julia brings food in a clandestine meeting with Winston, and he had real coffee, and he's got real food and real meat and everything, and he says he's going over the stuff that she smuggled in, because she's with her in her party working for them, it's like, you know, on the outsides of the outskirts, and she managed to smuggle this stuff out, and he couldn't believe it existed. He says, "You mean you got real this and real? Oh yeah, there's nothing those," and she used the B words, "don't have." Well, that's always been the way, folks, with these wonderful totalitarian systems. And the Liberals' covert green plan for Canada, poverty and dictatorship. And it's by Alan M. R. McRae. He wrote this for, I think it was What's Up With That, the newspaper. But he's just saying the things that I've said before for years of what it's about. But it's his insider who said, I've been working on an advisory group in the Trudeau government, and the group was not formed to discuss policy for the five-year horizon that governments are usually interested in, but to develop policies for the further future, 20 to 40 years out. The implication was that the group had concluded that the present economic model was flawed and had to be replaced. Again, this is the Maurice Strong agenda too, folks. It goes way back. Unregulated consumerism was unsustainable. Again, that's what they said too, post-industrial, post-consumerism, in Maurice Strong's reports, remember. So unregulated consumerism was unsustainable, and people would have to learn to make do with less. Well, how do you do that? Again, you don't, I've just said how you do it. You tax them all, make things so expensive they can't afford it. Then you outlaw it altogether, you see, for you. Anyway, it says the government would have to have more control over people to enforce their austerity, and the wealth of developed nations would have to be redistributed to help undeveloped nations. Well, that's the communist goal, which is a liberal goal, which is a global system run by one group. That's what it is. And a lot of people fall into it. Well, it's only fair we share everything with all the poor folk. As you get poorer and poorer, until you have a world of poor folk, the global plantation, and this elite at the top that laughs all their way to the bank because they rake in all the massive profits now that they own everything that you need to live. I'll put this link up for those who want to see it. Is to bring you all under control. That's the obvious thing about the whole thing. And then scientists have set out how to halve greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. All the usual organisations and newspapers are all on board with it. And then Canada's Liberal Party promises net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And you have to, mind you, step by step to get there. So you're seeing it already, chunk by chunk, you see. And in climate change, big lifestyle changes needed to cut emissions, from BBC. People must use less transport. Again, you won't be able to afford to get transport. eat less red meat and buy fewer clothes, all this stuff that Maurice Strong and the ones even long before that, what do folk need to survive? What makes them healthy? Well, meat definitely does. You see, we need that. Even, don't forget, some of the big gurus of some cultures, like Gandhi before, had to eat meat eventually to make up for things he was missing in his diet. And I've given you the articles from other Hindus who are top specialists in Britain in the health, and the National Health Service, who, and in other countries too, have said the same thing. One of them's even put his mother on it, on meat, because she needs it. He says it, you know. You need to be healthy. And if you're living in a country where you're freezing half the time, if you're not healthy, you'll definitely die if you're not healthy to start with and you don't have the proper nutrition in you to get through it all. This is Professor Sir Ian Boyle said the public had little scale for scale of the challenges from the so-called net zero emissions target. He said technology would help. He said the conundrum facing the UK and elsewhere was how we shift ourselves away from consumering. Again, and post-consumer. I've been saying this for years and years now. They're coming out openly and saying it to the public. Hey, can you stop consuming? Yeah. Yeah. And you say, consuming what? Everything. How about food? Oh, you can't have that. Eat some dandelions, are you? And then there's another one too. It's the agenda is a plan of action for people, planet, and prosperity, and so on and so on. I won't read them all because it's too much and too much to go through, but I'll put links up to the articles for those who can plod through it and can handle it without getting an ulcer. Because if you really get emotive about these things, you're already beaten, folks, you see. Psychological warfare controls everything massively today, massively. And no one escapes it. And also another article too to do with the fake heatwave charts and so on, and how they give you the graphs as opposed to what the actual professionals and government agencies give you different ones, which show you that they're really, really faking and fudging them. It's quite interesting. And then talk about, too, redistributing the world's wealth by climate policy and climate fraud tools, etc. Global warming swindles. It's quite something, isn't it? So I'll put up some articles from the UN itself on their revitalized partnership for sustainability, meaning depopulation, starvation, freezing to death or roasting and with no air conditioning, and depending on your income, of course. And they'll get their wonderful world down the road as we start dying off. It's a war, remember, crisis. And you can't get anywhere without crisis or the appearance of it, right? It's like the strategy of tensions that they had during the 70s and 80s. Of balance of power and how they literally gave you fake scenarios of crisis so you'd give up rights and even form opposition groups and then they would run both sides of things. That's standard, isn't it? The Hegelian dialectic. But they admitted that to the PSYOPs organizations in different countries. Again, this article here is Global Warming Fraud Exposed in Pictures, and then Urban Alliance. Interesting, this article here. It's on urban alliances and who are we and all the rest of it. Six issues which make progress could be transformative in creating urban environments for the better. What it really is to set up, it's a Salzburg Global Seminar. A Salzburg organization is huge. And when you go through it, look at the partners, you'll find everybody you know is on it. Ex and present prime ministers, for instance, of all countries and presidents and all the top players, not from all parties. But it's really, for the next part of it all be crowded into cities under Agenda 21. 21, 2015, 2030, and even say that there'll be fewer and fewer folk step by step living in the country. Of course, they'll have their special places for the ones who are ruling the world, just like the Dachaus and Soviet system. All the Politburo could go off and live in these massive mansions in the country, basically, with lots of servants, and all the peasants live in the cities. It's just wonderful, isn't it? Repetition. They always say hell is repetition, using the same lies, isn't it? Sometimes they'll differ the lies, but the goal is always the same. And then you have the latest program of Parks for the Planet Forum. It's the same organization, by the way. Achieving the Sustainable Development Goals. And by 2050, more than 75% of the world's population will live in towns and cities. Well, there you go, on you go. And I'll put up to the Salzburg system, Salzburg Global Seminars that they have, that all these wealthy, well-known folk all attend. They help run your world, even though you don't vote for them. In fact, you don't know they even exist, half of them, at least in those capacities. And London has become the world's first national park city, says the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. So he hosted a summit to sign the charter for the same organisation that we're talking about, you see, that you didn't vote for. And eventually, as the city expands, you'll obviously keep off the, remember that song, Keep Off the Grass, etc., from an old song from the 60s or 70s, signs everywhere, a sign, you know. So let's make more cities national park cities, is another article here. And then this one here, Google makes deep fakes, can't forget this one, to fight deep fakes. Right? What amazing thing it is. It's released a database of 3,000 deep fakes, videos that use artificial intelligence to alter faces or to make people say things they never did. They've had that for years, actually. I had that. Some folk did that for a while back. But at least did this, the voice thing. And but now they've got Google doing it, a database, and they hired stacks and stacks of actors and actresses and all kinds of people to play their parts. Companies cost fortune. No doubt they get money from the government to do it, I'm sure. And it says deepfake technology takes video and audio clips of real people, often police, politicians or celebrities, and uses artificial intelligence techniques to alter them in some ways. For instance, putting words in their mouth or transposing their head onto bodies of an anchor in pornography. But now it's pretty well perfected. You wouldn't be able to tell just looking at the thing. And they get Zuckerberg in too. They're going to also put a $10 million fund to find better ways to detect deep fakes. Well, I tell you, Facebook's one of the biggest fakes that there is out there, because no amount of propaganda is going to make them live down all the disgusting wrong that's done over the years, as you well know. But some folk, well, that's good of the guy that called them all stupid Fs, you know. It's amazing how they forget things. And this other article again about deep fakes to fight deep fakes, supposedly. Quite something. And Feds Kaplan from Dallas says the US needs more, not less, immigration for economic growth. It reminds me of them giving children that they said were hyperactive amphetamine. You really wonder what, I mean, because it's strange that they always do the opposite of what you'd think. And until you realize that someone's conning us all somewhere along the line. Because if you start getting children on amphetamine, and they know this, by the way, and different varieties of it, and their brain starts shrinking and so on, it doesn't grow normally. But again, it's mainly young boys they're attacking, so maybe there's not enough future leaders, there might be a problem down the road. So he's one of the Federal Reserve Bank presidents. Eh? But again, that's a strange organization, that the Federal Reserve, isn't it? It's really a banker to the world now. Because they'll lend out to all the countries through the World Bank and through other organizations that controls. Now you have microphones and Amazon's new smart glasses that give wearers access to Alexa on the go, and they could secretly listen into all conversations within earshot. Isn't that wonderful? And you'll see if folk that you know start to wear them and that, you know. Really. Wonderful how everybody you know becomes a spy, and they don't even know that's what they're doing. They're really so far gone, they don't even know that's what they're doing. They're spying and helping them. But anyway, as I've said before, I've rushed through this one, no doubt about it. Now remember, you can help me tick along and keep going by donating to cuttingthroughthematrix.com. There you'll find out how to send money. Remember, order your books and discs at cuttingthroughthematrix.com website. But again, getting back to what I started with, remember about Sinbad, Adventures of Sinbad, and there was different ones they gave you, Alibaba and so on, and his 40 Thieves, and stories that children could get into, and they could picture every character in them. They're so well described. But when it comes to the genie, Whitehall, hey, you would never trust that guy, right? Never trust him. Although he'll dump compliments, he'll give you an avalanche of compliments to put you to sleep, basically, and put you off guard as you're getting conned. That's where your politicians are. But they're not so smart as a genie, so they have all these professional con men that are hired that have worked through psychology and behaviorism and marketing companies. And they know how to fool you very well. They write all the speeches for the politicians, all parties, by the way. That tells you a lot in itself. Anyway, from myself.